governor's office is fixed, and will allow us to move the agency forward. There are a lot of policy bills that are also still moving through the process, and they're going to be talked about a little bit later in the agenda. For the most part, we are supporting that package of policy bills. The governor has indicated his willingness to sign both House Bill 3637, which passed on the Senate floor today, as well as Senate Bill 50. And so those bills are both, at this point, making their way through the final stages of the process. And the governor has indicated a willingness to sign both of those. So with the policy packages that are moving forward and the budget package that you're going to hear the most about today, I think we're going to leave here with, I think, the legislature having a higher level of trust and confidence in the agency's ability to move forward. You're certainly going to have that from the governor's office, and we're going to continue to work with you, as I told Lindsay and others. When I met with a lot of the regional or the executive leadership team at the department, one of my priorities as the governor's natural resource advisor is in 18 months when I leave this job, I want this agency standing tall and strong and providing leadership on fish and wildlife issues in the state of Oregon. And that's a personal and a professional goal of mine. One of the things that I think we can leave behind from this administration is a renewed, re-energized, revitalized Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife.
Thank you very much. That was excellent. I think that there needs to be a lot of credit given to the team approach that went into building what we built here in the legislature. And the governor's office, and Louise in particular, was a big part of that, that I think it needs to be made very clear that we are all united on the package that we're bringing to you today. And I would just like to personally commend Louise and the agency for working with the legislature, sitting down, working through a lot of hard issues, and all of us had to make some choices and give a little bit that we didn't want to give. But I think that we've got a good, solid, defensible package of stuff here. And with that, I would ask Senator Messerly to please come forward and give us a little bit of the history about how we came to be where we are today.
Well, thank you all for being here. As Susan just did, she's asked me to give a little of the background, at least from my perspective. Actually, I'd heard a lot about the department prior to my becoming a legislator. I came here in 1997 and actually got more involved, serving on the Ways and Means Committee for Natural Resources, as well as on the chairing the Water Policy Committee, which developed the Oregon Assembly Plan, and really got involved in some of the problems that we were hearing about and were seeing within the department itself. And what we found was a troubled agency that has questionable policies at times. Found some of that. We heard a lot about it. Found some distrust from the constituents, a distrust from the legislature, some of the fiscal offices we had, from the governors and from the stakeholders, and in some cases, inappropriate use of funds. All of these are very serious, very important issues that we've been threatening and trying to deal with, at least since I've been involved, and I'm sure prior to my time being here in the legislature as well. Last session, in 1999, we passed that House Bill 3225. Part of that bill instructed the interim committee, the SR2 committee, to review the department and try to come back to this session with recommendations on policy and the funding that might be appropriate and how we could build the department and start moving forward. To do that, we reviewed both from the fiscal office an audit, fiscal audit, as well as a performance audit from an outside source, and found that very, very helpful in helping us focus on what might be recommendations back to this body. We started out by working with the department, and we're disappointed and frustrated a little bit at that extent. About a year ago, I guess, maybe a little earlier than that, until with concurrence from the leadership, we started meeting with the commission and trying to get ideas of how could we help them, how could we make the department, what were their recommendations. because really it is their responsibility to move the department forward. We were somewhat disappointed in that regard as well. And so we ended up relying mostly on the reports, the fiscal reports. I want to make it very clear that we've been a lot of frustrations all around this issue. But it's my opinion, and I believe my colleagues' opinion, in almost all cases, that our job is to build this department in a positive way, make them as strong and as functional as absolutely possible. And that's where we've tried to come from, and I think it worked hard to come from that point. And we've done that by working with the governor's office, working with the director and the interim director, Lindsey Ball. During this session, we have had at least weekly meetings between the Senate and the House chairs to make sure and try to keep everyone focused, going the same direction. I think that's been very helpful. Susan and I have worked very closely, not only this year, but during the last interim, when she was the co-chair of the SR2 committee. And that's really, really been our focus. I think that this is absolutely appropriate and important, and most important right now, because in these times, with the listings of the endangered species, we need a strong department, probably now more than any time that I know of in history. And so it's an all-out effort on our part, not only through the funding, but the policy packages, to really sort out and try to do the proper things to help the department move forward and reach our long-term goals as well. So I'm pleased to see the turnout we have here today, and I want to thank Susan and the department for the work they've done to get us this far. We've got another busy week and a half at least, maybe more, and so I appreciate your support.
Thank you, Senator. What I'll do now is to turn the meeting over to Director Ball and Lori Warner to give you a picture of the financial situation that the department is faced with. And Mr. Rocco from Legislative Fiscal is here, too, a great part of the team. And I will just turn this over to you to explain the situation and explain the budget proposal.
Well, thank you, Representative Morgan. Before I get started too far into the presentation, there are some people that I want to acknowledge in the room today. And I'll start out with three legislators who devoted a lot of their personal time early on to the discussions as to how we were going to move forward with the situation we were in. Representative Bob Jensen, gentleman seated up here in the front, Representative Susan Morgan, chair of the Ways and Means Subcommittee, and Representative Jensen was the chair of the Salmon Committee over on the House side. Senator Messerly in the back row was chair of the Natural Resource Committee for the Senate side. We met on a fairly routine basis early on to discuss how we were going to help the agency. Ken Rocco, the Legislative Fiscal Office, was consulted as well. Louise Soliday from the Governor's Office was an integral part of this effort as well. So when we go through this, please remember those individuals, and I'm going to talk about a very special person here in just a moment as well, but I'll lead you into that. When I became the interim director for the Department of Fish and Wildlife in February, I explained to the Governor Kitzhaber, Louise Soliday, and Mike Greenfield, the director of Department of Administrative Services, that I had serious concerns over the financial integrity, fiscal integrity of this agency. And I explained briefly to them what my concerns were. Governor Kitzhaber very quickly looked at Mike Greenfield and Louise Soliday and said, can you help him? Because I needed help. And so it was shortly after that, a few weeks, that Ms. Lori Warner was loaned to me from State Park. She was currently the Deputy Director of State Parks, and she was loaned to me to help tease out the budget problems with the Department of Fish and Wildlife. I think, in my estimation, Ms. Warner is probably the best in state government, and she certainly proved herself through all the extra work that she took on in truthing out this budget. I made a list of issues and handed those concerns to Ms. Warner, and it took her about a day and a half to come back and say, yes, we have a problem. And it's somewhere in the realm of 4 to 6 million. And it took her about a week later, she said, it might be 4 to 7 million. And with a little bit more work, she came back and said, $6.5 million problem with the Department of Fish and Wildlife. That's when we went to Department of Administrative Services, Legislative Fiscal Office, and the Governor's Office, and everyone needs to know this was a complete surprise to everyone, from the Legislative Office to the Department of Administrative Services and to the Governor's Office. Now, this information was not known outside the Department of Fish and Wildlife. What happened shortly after that was we identified that we had to correct our budget problem, and since the governor's recommended budget had already been handed to legislature, because remember, this was all discovered during the legislative session, what we had to do was we had to balance ourselves with the governor's recommended budget. And what forced us to do, what that forced us to do was to take cuts internally inside the agency. Since the governor's recommended budget came out, we weren't at a point where we could go and ask for more money because we'd already received our instructions on the budget. And so in talking with Representative Susan Morgan and Louise Soliday, they advised take the cuts out of the headquarters staff and leave the field harmless as much as you can. There was that caveat. We want everything to come out of headquarters that can possibly come out of headquarters. So we accomplished that. But let me regress just a little bit and explain how we ended up in such a budget hole. And you have a handout here in front of you. If not, there's one over on the table that's dated April 2nd. And it's to me from Lori Warner. And if you will turn to, if I recall correctly, the fourth page of that document, you will see what the agency was doing. At the very top, you'll see the Fish Endowment account. Shortly after the 99 session, the Department of Fish and Wildlife acknowledged that they had a budget problem and had been spending money out of the Fish Endowment account. The Fish Endowment account is a dedicated account. Those funds have to remain in that account, cannot be spent. They had to stay in that account. They couldn't be used for cash flow in the agency. The agency agreed not to spend any more of the Fish Endowment funds and, in fact, agreed to pay that account back. And that agreement was reached between the agency and the Legislative Fiscal Office. Is that correct, Ken? And they paid $10,000 a month on the principal and $10,000 a month on the interest. It would take many, many years to pay that account back. What they did after they couldn't use the Fish Endowment Fund is they started spending money from the other dedicated accounts. The Access and Habitat Board, the Upland Bird Stamp, the Waterfowl Stamp, etc. You can read the column yourself. They also spent the agency obligated accounts. Probably what was most, probably what touched people the most was the expenditure of the Bighorn Sheep account. The Bighorn Sheep account in Oregon was started in 1985, and it generates money through donations, tag raffles, tag auctions, proceeds of which would go to Bighorn Sheep programs and projects. Be honest, there are some who say that account should have over $500,000 in it. There are some who say that account shouldn't have anything in it. Ms. Warner and I and the Wildlife Division staff reconciled that issue. That account is owed about $100,000, and we will settle up with that account at the start of the next biennium. But you can understand what happens when something of this occurs. There is a serious breach of the public trust when something of this nature takes place. So having understood where we were and where we need to go, Ms. Warner also put together a budget box. And if you go to page 3 of this document, you will see how she constructed the budget box that details what the agency needs to hold as cash reserve so they can operate. As Louise mentioned earlier, we have federal funds make up 50% of this budget. Other funds make up 40%. General funds make up 10%. Rough estimates on all those percentages. And the other funds that come into the agency come in cyclically. We have rises and falls in the amount of money that come to the agency. And we have to maintain at least a $6 million account so that in those lean times we have money. And we also then can carry ourselves across those lean times to the next peak when we have more money. As a result of that, when we spent all of the ending balance in our cash flow, which needs to be $6 million, and we started spending money in the dedicated accounts, our ending balance, of which those comprise the ending balance, continued to shrink below the minimums to maintain a cash flow for the agency. If you look at the bottom line on that sheet, just above the bottom line in the center, you'll see $13.7 million. And that is what Lori Warner advised us we needed to have in an ending balance so the agency would be solvent. The $6.5 million or $6.3 million that C in parentheses is what the hole was that we needed to add back to our ending balance in the account. So that drove us into, as I mentioned, an exercise of cutting the agency at the headquarters level. And if you all take this sheet, which at the top says budget balancing 2001-03 confidential, non-confidential. It's now out in the open. We sat down with staff at Portland headquarters and started identifying programs that would be cut. Painful, grueling exercise for an agency that felt everything was probably right, had been told everything was right in their budget, and it just simply was not. It came as a shock to everyone. We had our instructions to cut at the headquarters level, but maintain field operations as much as we could, and so we came up with this list. The reason, you notice on the back side, it comes to a total of $4.6 million is because there was a cost of living adjustment that was negotiable between legislature and the governor's office, whether it be general funds or other funds used for a cost of living adjustment, so we stopped there and didn't include another $2 million to make up for the full deficit. So that is what we started working from. In addition to that, when we looked at the budget, you know, there's a spreadsheet that starts out with Fish Division at the top. We also learned from our review that Lori Warner did of our budget that we had come to legislature and asked for money for different program areas, received the money, then went back home and took money out of that program area and spread it around different programs. One of the things that we are adamant about is that if we come to the legislature and we ask for money, the money we ask for is going to go to the program that we ask for it to go to. We're not going to go back home and start shifting dollars. But that is rather dishonest, in my opinion, to the legislative process. And once again, when you do that, you betray the public trust. So consequently, in this budget, we're going to have 33 additional packages to truth up the budget that's going to come through legislative fiscal office and Representative Morgan's committee on Thursday. And then hopefully we will have the budget right. Okay, that's the gloom and doom. Now, through all of this, I want to say that we never lost focus. No one that worked on this, and it was a fairly small group initially, starting with the three legislators I mentioned in the governor's office and the legislative fiscal and Department of Administrative Services with Linda Gilbert. We never lost focus that this was going to be our budget when we concluded this exercise. It wasn't going to be an agency budget. It wasn't going to be a governor's budget. This is going to be our budget. And I think that is probably one of the better outcomes of this whole exercise. Everyone worked together on this as partners. We had to solve the solution. Everyone had the intention of watching, wanting this agency rise to the occasion and meet the challenges that Oregon faces today. And the way we can do that is to build solid programs with appropriate funding. So that brought us to the point where we looked at where's Roy Elliker? Roy, there's one more handout. I got three here. There should be four. The budget solution. Where is it? You don't have it? Roy?
Yeah, we need to make some comments. Screw it up again, huh?
Well, not again. First time I've ever noticed it.
We'll get some copies momentarily and get those out to you. Let me explain what we've done. The governor's office and legislative leadership, Representative Morgan, looked at the $4.6 million hole that we were going to carve out of our budget and agreed that $2 million could be added back to the $4.6 million hole that we have. In filling that hole, we will add a deputy and a staff person back to the director's office in the Department of Fish and Wildlife. We will add a support person back to information and education. We will restore the staff biologist in the wildlife division. We will restore the marine and interjurisdictional manager in the fish division, the ESA coordinator, the hatchery facility coordinator. In the habitat division, we'll restore the water rights policy coordinator, the water rights technical coordinator, and the GIS coordinator. In service and supply, we will restore $290,000 in travel expense. And we will also fully restore the seasonal reductions that we took in the 4.6 cut. In addition to that, there are some broad packages that we are going to fund. One, of course, is $2 million to cover the $4.6 million hole. We're going to apply to eBoard for permission to obtain a grant from OLED to fund the habitat biologists that were stricken from the budget or were neglected to be put into the budget by the fault of the agency for $1 million. We're going to fund the fish screening program with $4 million from OWEB. We're going to restore the hatcheries that were slated to be cut with $834,000 of general fund. The fish endowment fund that the agency spent money from
we will repay it with $2.2 million of general fund with one-time expenditure. That comes to a total of $10 million over the original budget when we started. I think that that is the makings of a pretty solid budget for this agency. Certainly, with all the turmoil that surrounded the agency and the budget and fiscal integrity of this agency, I think that is testimony to the intention of the governor's office and the legislature to make sure that this agency moves forward with solid programs. Any questions? Bill.
Was there anything criminal about the mismanagement and then any personnel changes been made?
Question was, was there anything criminal with respect to mismanagement? If you are to file criminal charges against anyone in Oregon, you have to have culpability. Culpability, Bill, is where you can identify a person intentionally, knowingly, recklessly, or with criminal negligence committed some offense. We have not been able to identify that. The Legislative Fiscal Office, early on, when they looked at the Fish Endowment Fund, did consult with the Legislative Council Office with regards to that. And they did not, at that time, wish to pursue anything because of the culpability issue. And quite frankly, we didn't entertain that thought for very long, Bill, because we wanted to move forward with this. We had more pressing things to do, and that was to get this agency out in front and moving forward. Personnel changes. Personnel changes or personnel issues, and those remain confidential. Jim.
There is OSP enforcement in depth throughout all this.
Oregon State Police Fish and Wildlife Enforcement was not impacted by this. This was an internal issue for the Department of Fish and Wildlife. That was not contributed to by any outside partners, and so from the outset, we decided not to impact any of our partners with respect to this. It was our problem, and we needed to fix our problem. Now, Mr. Ken Rocco. May want to say a few words about how he is going to ensure that there is a safeguard built into the budget process to ensure that this doesn't occur again. Ken, if you would like to say a few words in that arena.
Not really. I think one of the things we're doing is we're just going to try to put some controls in so that there's a more of a reporting procedure that we can monitor what's in the budget in a better fashion than we've been able to in the past. And one of the ways to do that is through the appropriation bill where you see, and this gets back to what Lindsay was talking about, and how the agency can move money from places within like the fish division. They get a lump sum amount for fish division, and then they can move some of it to propagation if they want, some of the natural production. So what we're going to do is just tie the appropriation bill down a little bit by saying the propagation program, you're going to get this much. And if you want to change that amount because of changing priorities or something, you need to come back to the emergency board. The emergency board can allow you to move between categories. This is probably a lot more technical than you guys ever wanted to hear. That's how the mechanism will be put in place to do that kind of thing. so that there's a better monitoring function on the expenditures.
That wasn't the case before?
No.
They were free to go to that money?
Yes.
It was inefficient.
Correct. And that's just the way agencies, some agencies have that flexibility. Most agencies have that flexibility. And I think as the budget systems are developed, we have a new budget system coming online that will help in this. As people become more budget conscious, I think there's a ways to make it so that agencies have to at least get permission before they do that kind of thing. Since the legislature gives them the money to begin with, they need to come back and ask for permission if they're going to change the way the legislature expects them to be using the money. We can do that to some extent. And I think there are other things that we have found structurally that we can spur the agency on to make changes internally as far as how their staffing is for budget kind of operations. Now it's sort of scattered and dispersed, and we're going to try to centralize that to make the budget office more consolidated so that there's a better tracking internally of where dollars are being spent. I don't know what else we're going to... We're planning on other kinds of changes to give the agency more direction. Lindsay isn't a fan of budget notes, but he's going to have to live with a bundle of them, I think. So.
Another thing that kind of came up in the... Oh, Liz.
The ability to move funds and some stuff around, you're restricting that at this point. Their ability to function without being able to do that, we've been limited by not having that gap filled with $6.3 million that was identified in order to maintain funds dedicated. Without being accepted back and forth to fill the gaps during periods of time when expenditures exceed income throughout the year, you'd have to have your funds available.
Yes.
The question was, do we need that ending balance so we can get ourselves through the lean times and not be borrowing from the dedicated accounts? And Norm, you're exactly right. We have to maintain that cash reserve, that working cash reserve, so that we can pull money out of that cash reserve and leave those dedicated accounts that are generated through sportsman license fees and tags, leave those by themselves intact and use that working cash account so that we can float the agency during those lean times. There's another thing that I failed to mention earlier. When we receive federal grant monies or on a federal program, oftentimes we have to fund the federal program until its conclusion, and then the federal government pays us in one lump sum, or we get those payments on a quarterly basis. But during that time, before we're reimbursed, we have to float the agency. And so that's what that working cash will do for us. Liz.
And that's exactly along the lines of what I was trying to short out with the comment that Louise made from the calendar, that 50% of the budget is federal money.
50% of the budget is federal money.
And then and I understand that's doable, right? I think you explained it. It's money that comes to the agency after
the fact.
The function's been performed. And then I know with the tax sales, you've got January is a big month, and then April, August, at least in the fishing area, and so it's very fluctuating when those funds come in. That seems like a lot of money to have to float. If you're confident that you're going to have that sort of balance.
Well, I think one of the things that I think Representative Morgan will talk about in a few minutes is one of the concepts that we have is, I think it's rather innovative, that would allow the former Fish Endowment account to be first of all, restored so that it is a whole account once again, and then allow the agency to use that for this kind of a problem that you addressed, that you mentioned, to borrow from that account on a short-term basis to meet those short-term needs to pay off, to pay while they're waiting for the federal money to come. And when it comes, then they put it back into this account, and that gives them this kind of a floating mechanism. They did that illegally before, when they borrowed out of this account, and we're going to try to make it legal, but with walls around it, so that they can only do it for a certain length of time. It's going to be in statute how long they have to borrow from it. It has to be repaid with interest, and they have to keep track of all this. And this will, what this does is it allows them to have less of an ending balance. Without this kind of a mechanism, they would need another $4 to $6 million of ending balance in order to meet these kinds of needs. So that would make a even huge, I mean, a much bigger hole in the budget.
So in a sense, you're making what past practice by necessity legal with some
with significant constraints, not just some, but constraints that they know that everyone's going to be watching how they use this account, and it'll serve a good purpose, and it'll be if they do it properly, and we're going to make sure they do.
Norm, you mentioned that out of necessity, they didn't have to do this. You need to understand that. The money, the ending balance was there, and it was spent. It was not added back. And so once they did that, that's when they started borrowing money from the dedicated accounts, which Mr. Rocco explained was unlawful. And so now what Mr. Rocco has done is, with the bill is to allow for the agency to use that as a cash reserve, but be required to pay that back with interest. And so it would be just like going to a bank and borrowing money, or to the Treasury, State Treasury, and borrowing money. So it is set up in an appropriate way now. And what happened before was they were borrowing money and weren't paying it back. And they were just in kind of a spiral. They just kept going further and further into the hole. There's some other hands up. Al?
The big horseshoe account that you talked about earlier, the $100,000 figure.
Yes.
Are there plans to fill that account up again?
What we will do, Al, is we will use other funds to put back into that account. And we will balance that. That is going to be balanced out in the next budget.
Do you have a timeline on that?
As soon as we get a budget. Bill.
Ms. Allen, I guess I'm a little bit submitted recently. Last year, this whole Fish and Wildlife business came up with the Fish and Wildlife Commission. Jack Graham, when they talked about it at the time, Jack had a plan, and it seemed as if it was being repaid even quicker, but it was a monthly report, and repaid even quicker than they had anticipated. Now, did they, after laying out that plan and starting that process, did they then start going illegally into these other accounts, or was this a repeat of that discussion?
The question that was asked was, after the agency moved into a business plan in their 9901 biennium, and it appeared that the agency was gaining ground, were they paying these accounts back? The answer is they weren't gaining ground, and they were still borrowing that money and spending that money.
Well, just good news on paper?
there were other unforeseen expenses that came up in the biennium, such as the Social Security number issue with the point of sale, if we had to overhaul a computer program, etc. Don't get me wrong, without the business plan, we would probably be about $2 million deeper in the debt than what we are today. But the agency continued to have expenses on top of expenses that went beyond what the business plan was.
And the agency's plan basically was to come to the legislature with a budget that would allow them to get funded at a certain level, and then as soon as that budget was approved, they were going to go back and reduce expenditures again without asking the legislature that. And that's what Lindsay noticed and caught, and this is why we're trying to change that. We're trying to address it before to say, here's the level of your budget. You don't have to make cuts. And as far as repaying the Fish Endowment account, they were making payments on the interest that they owed, and they started to make a $10,000 a month payment on the principal, which would have taken them about 22 years to pay back. And I don't know if that was not in anybody's idea of a good time, a timely payback for that account. And they only did that as a good faith effort. They knew that there was going to be something changed about that.
In conjunction with what Mr. Rocco mentioned too, Bill, is that internally in the agency, they were holding vacancies they came forward and said, we need X amount of dollars. And then they came back and they had to save X amount of dollars, so they had to hold vacancies. And we were holding over 75 vacancies in the agency for over 12 months. And that came as a shock to our legislators because they felt that the agency had been fully funded. And then when they learned that we had not been filling positions, it became obvious why we weren't providing the services that they had expected the department to provide. And so we have to truth up this budget so everything that we come in and ask for within program, everyone receives service delivery in the field.
Is any of this $1.3 million revamping of the computers, the Social Security problem, is any of that filled into this deficit?
No, that money has been spent. And that money that was spent was really spent from the savings. And so, as I said, they just found themselves with more expenses than what they had income, and they were just slipping further and further down the slope. Liz?
The positions that were held open, were they the amount of funding, was that pretty consistent with what the unfunded coal mandate was? You know, the agency had to give the coal packages.
Well, you know, the agency laid a lot of blame on COLAs, and I think the agency did that really in an inappropriate fashion. COLAs are an issue for every state agency, and you know that you're going to be faced with COLAs. And so if you're going to be faced with a COLA, and if you're an other-funded or federal-funded agency like we are, and you need to make some adjustments in your budget so you can address the COLA, just not let the COLA hit you and not be ready for it. Now, even a general fund agency will be faced with a COLA, and that COLA is offset by the governor's reserve that he holds for the COLA. But it still does not, even a general fund agency, it still doesn't fund the full COLA account for the agency. So what we have done in this budget, with the guidance of Lori Warner, is we have built a COLA account with other funds so that we can address that issue in this upcoming biennium. And so, therefore, what we tell legislature we can provide in services will be there because the COLA is built into the budget, and it wasn't before. They just kept spending money out of the ending balance to pay for the COLA. And they get themselves into that trap. Don.
I heard you say that when you borrow money from the Fish Endowment Fund, then you have to pay it back with interest. And one of the main reasons for borrowing that money is to pay for federal projects that are in funded rather than front funded. And the federal government isn't going to provide you income to pay that interest. They keep the money and they only give you a certain amount. So how are you covering all these interest payments in the budget?
Okay. The first issue is that the Fish Endowment Fund was not spent solely because of the federal monies.
Right. Well,
it was spent on a whole array of expenses incurred by the department.
No, I'm thinking of the forthcoming budget rather than tax.
Okay. If we're looking into the future and we're going to see that we have to borrow money from the Fish Endowment account, which we will have to do if Senate Bill 62 passes, we can borrow that money, pay interest back to that account, and then use that interest for maintenance of buildings, et cetera, throughout the agency. So we'll be paying interest to ourselves. If we had to go borrow money from a private institution or the Treasury, we would be putting money out on the table, as they have in the past, and you would find that that account would run between $750,000 to $800,000 a biennium, and that money would just disappear from us.
Right.
And so what Mr. Rocco has done with his ingenious thinking on this Senate Bill 62 is, yes, we have to pay the interest. That is an obligation for us, but then we can utilize that interest as well for maintenance of our buildings and whatever else that we have in the agency. Mr. Harder.
Governor's recommended budget cut 22 positions to more safely gain detail. Can you give us the status of any restoration and where they are now?
Well,
Rocco.
The OVID budget that was passed out of subcommittee yesterday restored 7 of the 21. I know about 21, but there were 7 that were lottery funded, 7 other funded, 7 general funded. The state police budget did not include anything for the 7 generally funded ones, and that's usually where the general fund goes for those. We have plans on restoring possibly all 7 of the enforcement officers paid out of the ones that were lost out of the fish and wildlife budget, and the committee restored the 7 lottery funded ones yesterday. So there's at least 14, I would say 13 or 14 of the 21 restored.
And there are still 7 missing.
There are
7
missing in action. Those are the general funded ones, which I didn't get the deal with them. I can't help you.
Okay. Terry.
The Marine Division has a couple of add-on packages. Does he have the same as always before?
Terry, the packages, all of the packages in the budget have not been worked out yet. So we can't really comment on those packages yet. This document that you have today on the $2 million and the other money that's been added back to the budget was just finalized yesterday afternoon late. We're still working on the packages. That's a task that we have later this evening and tomorrow to deal with. But we are very much aware of the Marine program packages in the budget. Liz.
The initial poll, which is the confidential document, was 18 positions.
Correct. I'd have to look. Actually, I believe it's 20 positions.
20 positions?
Mm-hmm.
And you, if I counted right, thank you, correct me here.
I think this restoration is
9.38. Okay. I'll be your 38 person. And then, so what will happen mostly is IME and habitat. Okay, because that's the way. You've got 2 people from direct office. I can't count enough. Four, five, four.
Yes.
I think the ones that are being lost.
With the numbers, down to 9. Those are the.
All the numbers.
Okay. I'm just trying to interpret.
Well, if you take your add back list here, and take your cut list, and you compare director's office, I&E, that will tell you exactly what is going to be added back and what will be cut. Now, I want to point out, as Louise Soliday from the governor's office mentioned, we're not done yet. The legislature's not over. There may be some other changes to this.
Yeah, while we're into the conditions currently, all vacant, or are we all talking about the reduction here?
Most of the 20 positions are vacant. Any other questions? I'll have to return it, turn it back over to you, Representative Morgan. Oh, Al?
I just wanted to thank the team for this package. It was a little bit better than I did when I walked into it. So thank you, Chair Morgan and Senator Mazzarelli and your team of wonderful and thoughtful. Thank you very much.
Well, you know, Al, again, I wanted to advise everyone that the legislators that I mentioned earlier, Senator Mesterly and Representative Jensen and Chair Morgan, Louise Soliday, Linda Gilbert from the Department of Administrative Services, Ken Rocco, and certainly Ms. Lori Warner deserve all the credit here. We pulled this together absolutely the worst possible situation walking into a legislative session in this way with a budget that's in shambles and trying to put it back together. And working from a way that everyone looks towards the future and success rather than absolute failure.
And so those are the people that really deserve the big credit today. Attorney Morgan.
Thank you, Captain Ball. The piece that is the last piece to kind of add on to this are the policy bills that are currently in various stages of progressing through the legislative process. And I think that there's been a lot of discussion already on Senate Bill 62, which will be renamed as the Fish and Wildlife Deferred Maintenance Account, which we've all been referring to as the Fish Endowment Account. And the Fish Endowment Account was really the door that opened in how we got into the whole issue. So, and I think there's been a lot of discussion about what's in this bill. It, as far as where it is in the process, it has been heard by Senator Messerly's policy committee in the Senate. It's currently in my Ways and Means subcommittee, and we will be hearing the bill on Friday and passing it out. It'll go back to the Senate floor, and then it will come to the House floor. Another bill that's really important is House Bill 2166. And what House Bill 2166 does is it repeals the sunset on the fee increase for hunting and angling fees. So we're going to be asking the hunters and the recreational fishermen to shoulder the increased cost of the tags, the cost that you've been paying during the last biennium, and the money that will be generated by that, which will be somewhere in the neighborhood of $4.6 million for this biennium, is important in the funding of the agency. That one has passed out of Representative Jensen's policy committee on the House side, the Salmon Committee, and it also is currently in the Ways and Means subcommittee, and we'll be moving it out also on Friday. Senate Bill 62, we've already talked about. House Bill 3637 is a bill that does a number of things. It provides legislative guidance for the governor to consider in appointing members to the Fish and Wildlife Commission who possess natural resources backgrounds such as commercial fishing, recreational fishing, hunting, agriculture, forestry, and conservation. Requires the commission to meet at least once every 2 months. Specifies that the commission may reappoint the director to additional terms, adds to State Fish and Wildlife Commission wildlife policy declaration that the commission shall represent the public interest of the state of Oregon in the management of wildlife, adds goal directing the commission in wildlife policy implementation to make decisions that affect wildlife resources of the state for the benefit of the resources, and to make decisions that allow for the best social, economic, and recreational utilization of wildlife resources by all user groups. There also is a provision for Senate confirmation of the department director that sunsets on January 2nd of 2003. This bill has passed both houses and passed the Senate this afternoon and is headed for the governor's desk. The other main policy bill is Senate Bill 50, which calls for the relocation of the agency from Portland down to Salem. That bill has had a hearing in Senator Messerly's policy committee on the Senate side. It's had a hearing in my Ways and Means subcommittee. We passed it out. It was in the full Ways and Means committee about an hour and a half ago, and it passed successfully out of that committee, so it's headed for the Senate floor. Those are the policy pieces that go along with the budget piece. And again, as we kind of draw to the end of the presentation here, this has, as I've said, been one of the most strange and convoluted things that I've ever done. And I think that all of the people that worked on the team that brought the issue forward and then dealt with the issue and brought the solution to you that we're presenting to you today, the highest and most important thing that we all had in our minds and in our hearts as we went forward in doing this was to restore the agency to a stature that it needs to have in Oregon. We want to provide the highest level of service to the patrons of the agency and to the citizens of Oregon. We want to restore people's trust that the agency is spending all of the revenue streams that come into it in a way that advances its mission and enhances the need in the state to conserve and wisely use the resource that the agency has jurisdiction over. There are, I'm sure, going to be bumps in the road as we attempt to get this package through the process and get it implemented. But it is, I know, my sincere wish and hope that what comes out of this is an Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife where people are proud to work for the agency, feel charged up about coming to work in the morning, where the people that are in the constituencies that the legislators serve are being well served by their agency and trust the agency and feel that the agency is operating in everyone's best interest. And with that in mind, what I'd like to do is just open it up again one more time for any last questions that people have or any comments that people have. But really, I can't say enough about the team that has put so much work into this. Captain Ball has been just extraordinary in the leadership that he's shown here and in his dedication. And I think that from the saga that's unfolded to you, you can appreciate the pits of despair that we found ourselves in at times and just not knowing where to turn and how to make things work and how to come out of this with a positive piece that restores the agency to the stature that it should have. And Captain Ball, I think, has a huge role. He had a huge role to play in what you've had presented to you today. But the team that we put together was a great working group, and it was an honor and a privilege to get to know the people that worked together during this. And with that, I'll just open it up for anybody that wants to ask more questions or make more comments.
You mentioned maintaining sports, the mission of the department. I was wondering if there's any plans to do anything with the strategic plan that came out of last year.
The question was, does the agency plan on doing anything differently with the strategic plan that was produced by the department and entitled to Vision 2006? Norm, there isn't anything on the radar right now that would force us to change anything in Vision 2006.
Yeah.
Director Ball, 75 agencies are being held for the past 12 months.
The question was, if we get a budget that is being proposed, will we fill the 75 vacant positions that I'd mentioned earlier in the presentation? Phil, the first thing that we're going to do is we're going to make sure that we balance our budget out. We'll allocate 48% of that budget for the first fiscal year, 52% for the second fiscal year. Once that is accomplished, then we will look at the positions that we can fill. And when we do that, we will be working with the Human Resources Division of the Department of Fish and Wildlife, advertising those positions and recruiting people to fill those positions.
It was identified in ways and means that the department has been lacking in keeping up with net long-term maintenance that happens with some ongoing maintenance is pooled or to the level of reaching $30 million. Is there a plan, obviously, an endowment count to $2 million, even fully restored, just some interest isn't going to adequately deal with that? Is there dollars in here that, because when they talk about the transportation budget, we keep hearing the discussion of, well, the longer we wait, the more expensive it gets. And so, is there anything in this budget that you've seen or the team came up with in regards to that?
The question for the audience was, is there a package in the ODFW 0103 budget that addresses the hatchery maintenance issue that the agency has faced? And that issue is about a $30 million problem. I think $26 million is a closer figure. The answer to that is no. There is no specific package in this budget to address hatchery maintenance.
I'm going to add to that, and Mr. Rocco, I think you could deal with the issue, too, on the budget.
I just wanted to mention that in the Fish Endowment account initially was designed to take care of hatchery maintenance with interest earnings, and it never dollar from the interest earnings of that account has ever been used for hatchery maintenance, and that situation will be fixed, and there will be up to $400,000, $450,000, something in that range, available for hatchery maintenance in the coming biennium, which is an increase since it hasn't been done before. So I don't know if you can call it a plan, but at least there will be dollars available for that.
What I might also add is that we've had detailed discussions on the need for the agency to come up with a coordinated strategy and plan in regard to hatcheries, and we will be addressing that also. Further questions? Comments? Representative Jensen.
Thank you, Susan. I just would very much like to thank you for the work you've done. Some of the rest of us have been along providing a little push here and there, but you've really been at the very heart of it. And without your leadership, we would have been in some deep trouble on this. So I really appreciate what you've done, and I think you've done
Thank you very much. But again, I'd like to go back to the team that we had working on this, because really there were times when all of us were ready to throw in the towel and quit, and I think it was just our collective energy that kept us all pulling together to see it through. In closing, I would like to thank you all for the time that you took out of your busy schedules to come here today. And as you take these documents home with you and work your way through them, if further questions arise out of what you're seeing, please don't hesitate to get a hold of any of us. We'd be glad to get you the information that you need. And once again, thank you very much.
I'll take that.